This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Good morning, this is Talking Devils, the leading independent Manchester United podcast. I'm your host, Wayne Barton, joined by United legend Paul Parker and Dave Murphy to talk over the last week at United. If you're watching live on YouTube or Facebook, feel free to get your comments and questions in. If you're watching the replay, feel free to say hello and comment. We do still reply to the comments we get. And if you're listening back on the audio podcast, be sure to like and subscribe and leave a review on the platform you're listening on. Paul, how are you doing this week? You all right?
Yeah, I'm fine. Thank you very much, Wayne.
And David, how are you?
Yep, not too bad. David, that's very, very, very formal. Okay,
I just thought Paul's dressed up for the occasion. I'm looking a bit smart. You're not, but I thought I'd give you your Sunday name, just so we're all on our toes. And before we begin, a very special happy birthday message to Alex, a young lad, big United fan. He's 12 years old today. He was actually born on the day when United were 2-0 down in the Community Shield to City and came back to win 3-2. And Paul knows the feeling of being in a game like that. So happy birthday, Alex. Happy 12th birthday. Have a good one. Hope you have a great day, mate. So let's crack on to football. I was going to start with the weekend games. But we'll talk about the comments this morning made by Raphael Varane. Paul, there was a directive last week that was posted. The officials met the players and, you know, they go around before, you know, Paul fell foul of this once in the 1994 season. You know, they issued the new directives on the tackle from, he looks at me quizzically. I know where I'm going with this, Paul.
I know, so do I, but I was trying my best there. I want to put my head in my hands, to be honest, really.
So in 1994, after the World Cup, they changed the rules on the tackle from behind and they went round all the clubs and sort of told them what was going to happen. And I think Bruce had been done similarly maybe 3 or 4 years earlier as well on something. And Paul was basically sent off in the first game. It wouldn't have been a sending off in normal days, but it's like the referees were clamping down and wanted to make examples. So Paul was sent off. Thankfully, we won that game, so it didn't really matter. But Rafa, the rule change this time around is to do with too much time wasting in games, and the new directives, we saw them at the World Cup already that they've been implemented, that they're going to add this, I think 5 to 7 minutes on average on top of the 1 to 3 that were already added. So you're talking games that could be 54, 55 minute offs. We saw it at the World
Cup. They've done that average already, haven't they?
Yeah.
The average is up already, just in the last few games I've seen here.
Yeah. Well, that's all I mean. We saw it at the World Cup and we're already seeing it here. The players, well, Varane is the one leading the charge this morning. He's saying players are playing too much. It's too intense. I had a very quick run through, because obviously I only posted it this morning, so I did some very quick number crunching on this. If you said that United have had a successful season or they've played a lot of games, you would probably say, on top of what the average is, maybe 55 games is a successful season. So anything 55 and above, right? So United from 63 to 1995 had 14 seasons. So that's one in every two with 55 games or more. And from 98 to 2013, they had every season had 55 games or more. Seven out of the last 10 have had 50 or more. 55 or more, I think. So, but the Europa League now as a league, there's four different competitions. Obviously, there's been an increase in competitions over that time. The structure of those competitions have changed from being European knockouts to, in the 90s, you know, there were six guaranteed Champions League games and so on and so forth. And obviously, also you've got to take into account the player numbers. So in the 60s, the squads might have been 12 to 15 players. In the 90s, when Paul was playing at United, maybe 15 to 17, in terms of you'd have your 11 and then players that would come in. The turn of the century, 22 to 23, and maybe now 25, 26. I look at the numbers from last season, De Gea, 58 games, Bruno, 58, and one sub. Rashford, 46 and 10 subs. Varane himself, 34 games. The average, 43 to 44. Players are more like athletes now rather than, they're not more like athletes than footballers, but you know where I'm going from. They're more athletically conditioned than what they used to be. It's a more athletic game, but the ball itself is not in play for as long as it was when you were playing, Paul. It's very difficult looking at these, like, just looking at that raw data. I know you hate that sort of term, but looking at the numbers in terms of the quickest way that we can analyse it, it doesn't seem to be that big a difference. The biggest difference is that there are more players to play the games in the squad, and that therefore the pressure on them should technically be less. Yes, there's more athletic. The game, when the ball is in play, it moves a bit faster because the ball's a bit faster, and then people are more athletic. But I think that should be the balance, right? That, to me, it seems like the balance. I know, yeah, all right, we saw last season that Bruno looked knackered at the end of it, 58 games. But really, is it that big a difference that there should be a player revolution on it?
The man who works in the foundry goes to work every single day, and he gets the weekend off, and he's knackered on a Friday night. But no one ever pats him on the back and says, you can have a break. You know, you have a rest and you carry on getting paid. You know, so for me, it's just they go to the players. They virtually put the words into the players' mouths and the players just bounce off of it. It's like virtually, if you put it to being a parent, if you tell your kid, cool, your nose is running, you can't be well, the kid's going to go, well, I don't feel well. Well, okay, then you better not go to school. But if you turn around and say, oh, your nose is running, and all of a sudden in the kid's head, he's thinking he can get away with it, you turn around and then say to him, well, I'll tell you what, you go to school, ring me, or get the school to ring me, and I'll come and get you if you're not well. Once they get there, they're quite happy to be there. And you have to go through things as a parent, as an adult, during work. But I just find football, so you've said it all there, which I was going to jump to. I think the average now is about 54 to 50, say 53 to 55 minutes a game. Yep. So in theory, at one point, football used to be put down as entertainment. It's not entertainment now. If you've got 90 minutes to entertain, you're only giving people 53 minutes to 55, there's something wrong. Because there's something going wrong with what's happening out there on that so-called entertainment. And the players moaning, they're earning a lot more money. I don't begrudge them that, because that's what the game is about now. Give out money. But when you're playing less time and you have got a lot more players to choose from, but managers sometimes don't really want to, as much as you feed them so many players, they still believe in that way of continuity, a lot of them. They don't really want to make that change. And there's few players out there who have actually grasped that and just realised that when I'm at something good, I want to be involved in every single game. Yeah. And the likes of Bruno wants to play every single game, like Messi did in his heyday. Yeah. And another player who's like that was Declan Rice, played every single game. He didn't matter what he wanted to play. So I think now we've made it very easy for the players to turn around and be injured. They virtually have mental injuries where someone tells them, with a blood test, that they're tired. They might turn around and say, "Cool, you look like you're looking a bit leggy." When I hear people who are around me who are football fans and they talk about one of their players never have a bad game. They're always tired. They're looking a bit leggy. Not that he's human and having a bad game. So what Varane is coming out with for me is a cop out already. And he's one, you know, he misses games. I think he had one of his best times in a long time last season. He played a lot of games on the bounce. And that was through that time when United were going for a really good spell of winning games, and winning games, you know, they were justified to win those games. That hasn't happened to United for a long, long time over a lot of managers. They were winning games before and everyone was just accepting a win rather than looking at performances. So I think someone like Raphael Varane has kind of just got to suck it really and get on with it. He did it at Real Madrid. He was going down. You think about Real Madrid during their Champions League time when they was winning Champions League and winning their domestic league as well. How many changes did they make during that run? Not many. So again, we're getting to that where everyone's we're shelling out millions and millions of money on footballers, and then we're giving them excuses because they're playing too many games. How does that make any sense? How are people being brainwashed into thinking that way? Look at players in the Championship and below. How many games they play? As soon as they play on the weekend, this weekend just gone, they've got midweek games coming up. Why don't the Premier League do that? To allow them to give them a spare weekend or spare weekend in case something goes wrong or whatever. You've got weekends so you can fit games in. Do the games early while the players are at, you know, allegedly at their peak. That's what a pre-season is for, to give you that, to get you a spark and to get your burst. But it doesn't, because you go away, you travel 5,000-6,000 miles, you're dragged all over countries to play games. And so, you know, you've got to make your mind up. If you're going to play football, you've got to realise that you're going to get tired, and you have to, and that's the reason why you get tired, because you're human, but pre-season is meant to prepare your body, Wayne. Prepares your body for maybe hits and for the fact of a little bit of durability, because football, when I was playing, was about durability. That's what pre-season was about. So you just grit your teeth a bit more and you dig in and you go on. And it's amazing how, when you're winning games of football, that all of a sudden your legs suddenly feel stronger, your lungs feel like they can open up a bit more, and you get on with it. But when you start losing games or things ain't going right, all of a sudden people start feeling, oh, he's got a slight hamstring. He's got a little, you know, feeling a little tingle in his leg. Yeah. I mean, a five-year-old kid wakes up in the morning with a tingle, and they'll go and run all day at school.
Yeah, you can't. I know it's one of Paul's bugbears, so I thought a good one to start off with. Dave, on the mechanics of what Varane's talking about, obviously the extra minutes do change something in terms of, we always saw it at the World Cup, they add something to it. They take, it's the drama that it adds to it, the sort of nervousness, the anxiety of someone now, they can't enter the 90th minute thinking a two-goal lead is enough to finish, because if a team pulls one back in the 92nd minute, there's absolute frenzy for that last sort of 6 or 7 minutes. It becomes a mini game all of its own, and that's sometimes mentally and physically taxing. And I guess for me, it's not, I think the clamp down on the time wasting is great, because it's become a real pandemic of some sort in the game, where it's horrible to watch, the time wasting that goes on from the goalkeepers to the players running round, and United are not innocent in that. But what's the solution to that? Is it this to sort of regulate the behaviour, or is it like Varane, you know, like the players have been saying, to cut down on the games? What do you do? I mean, I'm all for making the Champions League a knockout, making the Champions League a competition where only the champions go in. I'm happy for there to be fewer games and make it a knockout in the Europa League. I'm happy for all of that. Or if they want to move the league itself down to, like, well, we 20 teams, so go down to 18 teams and play 34, fine. But it doesn't seem to me like that would resolve some of the issues that Varane is talking about, really, that loss of two or three games. And really, in terms of being reasonable, those changes that I've just suggested, like making those competitions knockouts again, or reducing them to, you know, champions qualify only, they're not reasonably going to be applied. So do you think that Varane's got a point, or where would you draw the line in the middle of that?
No, it's an absolute cop-out. I mean, you've just listed off games, you know, average games since the 60s, and it's 55 games for the majority of that from the 60s to now. But the big bonus for players nowadays is you've got 25, 26 players in a squad. Now, I get it that the manager is always going to want to play his best team in the big games, in most games. But it's up to the manager then to use that squad, to utilize it better. It's an absolute cop-out. I mean, earlier on, Paul said, and I did read about this during the week, I think Newcastle, the average game was like 52 minutes the ball was in play. City, 56. But the sweet spot was around 55 minutes, 56 minutes. I mean, that's a cop-out as well. That's 34 minutes of a game where there's absolutely, the ball's not in play. I mean, can you imagine going to a movie theater and, you know, two-thirds of the way in, the screen goes off and the lights come on and we're all told to go home. You know, it's, well, you've had your two-thirds, so everybody has to leave. Same thing. You know, we're getting I'm not surprised players are complaining about this because it's one of the last things that they can't complain about. I don't agree with it. I 100% agree with the extra time. I absolutely loved it in the World Cup because you're right. It creates, you know, at times sheer panic in the last, you know, those whatever 7 to 10 minutes. And it's entertainment. And, you know, Paul said earlier on, that's what we're paying for. We're paying for entertainment. I absolutely love it. Now, I do believe over the next couple of seasons, it may not turn into that panic for the last 7 to 10 minutes. But I absolutely love it. I've seen it yesterday in the Charity Shield. You've seen what happened. Arsenal got the draw. Then he went on to win. But you are right. You're 2-0 up in the 89th minute. With the previous rules, it really is game over, right? But you scored a goal in that 90th minute. It's sheer panic. And who gets the entertainment out of it? The fans do. I mean, it is a bit baffling that they're complaining about this, you know, when obviously they haven't themselves sat down and thought, well, if it's been an average of 55 games over the past 50, 60 years, but yet we have more, you know, we got more employees to help us lift, you know, the burden on all this. Paul's right. You know, this is someone whispering in his ear to complain about it. I mean, if you want to complain about anything, complain about the 8 preseason games we just played. In 2 occasions, we played 2 games, one after the other, you know, in successive days. I don't think United have ever played 8 preseason games, and we started on July 12th. In less than a month, we played 8 preseason games. The final point on this is, and I never thought about this, but, you know, Paul said, Why not pack the start of the season with more games? And he's right, because that's when the players are at their fittest. That's when they're less leggy at that time. And pack the start of the season with more games rather than wait until March and April when, you know, English teams are in the, you know, the latter stages in most cases of European competition, and all of a sudden it's coming thick and fast and, you know, the top sides are in the final rounds of the FA Cup and the League Cup. You know, the first thing that always gets thrown under the bus is, oh, get rid of the League Cup. You know, it should be only for championship teams. Why should it only be for championship teams? It's ridiculous. It's all geared towards TV and money. That's all it's geared towards. I would love nothing more than the Champions League to be the champions, and we would lose out. You know, we wouldn't have been in it for the past 10 years. Well, 9 years. You know, it's the champions and it's a knockout. It's you know, Manchester United versus some team in Finland. You've now played a team and you've given them enough revenue for that club to probably last them for 2 or 3 seasons. That's the way that whole competition was, and that's the way it should be. It should be like the FA Cup in that it doesn't matter who you are, how big or small you are, you just get pulled out of that bag. And it's a knockout competition and you're gone. And then that shows who the real, real champions of Europe are. I mean, this Champions League thing has been a farce for a long time now. Some really bad sides have been deemed the champions of Europe. And it should only be for the champions. It reduces the games. We no longer hear this BS about the League Cup, you know, should be for championships teams. And then the FA Cup. I mean, they're still crying about the FA Cup from when United didn't go and still blaming them every time there's a bad run of games in it. They go back to blame United for going to Brazil. It's ridiculous. The FA Cup is the biggest domestic trophy in the world and it should be treated as such. But when we get players that complain about games, all of a sudden these cup competitions get thrown in there and we're being told that they're not really that important. So for me, it's a cop-out.
No, sorry, Dave, but what you're saying is 100% right. For me, what they never really think about the players. Because as far as I'm concerned, if you're a player, you want to win a medal. You want to play in a big occasion. You want everything. You want your ego being massaged. You want the adulation. You want that moment to walk out of Wembley. And you try and take away from a Martinez or Martinez, whatever, you try and take away his medal from winning that League Cup against Newcastle. You turn around and say to him, that's nothing. He's come to the UK. He's come to England to play in the so-called best league in the world. And in his first season, he's won a medal in the final. So that's the bit. No one thinks about the players. Everyone's thinking about going out with this kind of narrative of tiredness and give people a rest in between and games. So that needs to be changed. But I'm one of them from where I started, where I come from. I come from the third division. So straight away, I think about them. At the start of every season, they know that they're going to play more games than those people in the top league, regardless of any cup games. They're playing more league games. And then they've got their in-house competition. They've got the FA Cup. Then they've got their Pizza Cup. And then they've got their League Cup. So in theory, they've got a lot of football, but they want that football. They want the football. The players want the football because when I was playing and all that, it was about playing games to earn money and winning games to earn money. It was called an incentive. But when your money is all, they have to give you virtually all your money week in, week out now in the top division, because if you don't, they know they can go somewhere else and get that. Trying to make football in the Premier League an incentive when you go out and play a game is very, very difficult, because as we know, if your belly's full already, you're not really going to run too hard because you might hurt yourself even more because your belly's full. So you slow down because you're happy already. So that's the biggest problem. And the other side of it, people say, well, do this with the wages, cut this and then get them, you know, make a big difference. As we know, the way the world is at the moment is that you take away something, you say you're going to, we'll give you that. Someone will come along and drop a backhander to make sure that person is happy yep. where he is if they can't get. So we're in that position at the moment where our football is almost hitting a stalemate. It's getting to that point where it's becoming unenjoyable because yep. of what the people who don't know football, which are doing to suit themselves with marketing and everything to keep money generating that way. They're not bothered about fans. All they're bothered about, marketing. That's why the Champions League, really, if it was anything else other than football, the Champions League would have to change its name because it's not a Champions League.
Yeah.
So that's my whinge.
That was a good one from both of you. We'll move on to the weekend. Hopefully not too much whinging to do with Onana making his first Old Trafford game and didn't go perfectly for him. So Højlund was announced just before kickoff, but then it was announced seconds after that he's out for a few weeks. He picked up an injury with Atalanta. Eventually the game gets underway. Really, really shocking goal to concede with Onana. But In the first half as well, there was a lot of great play through Fernandes, Garnacho, Anthony and Rashford in the second half came alive when United turned around and won the game. I guess that's where I'll start with you on this one, Devo. What did you make of the game? Obviously, the goal's a bad one to concede, but some of the football was really outstanding.
I mean, the Onana thing was. I mean, I'm glad it's out of the way, because that was going to happen at some point in the season. I mean, when we started to look at signing him, all these videos start popping up on Twitter and YouTube about the mistakes he'd made. I'm glad that mistake's out of the way. I just think the defenders and the team is going to have to learn that he does stand a little bit high up the pitch. I mean, if Dalot doesn't go across the pitch, that doesn't happen. So I think it's just a matter of them learning about where he's going to be, where he's situated on the pitch. I'm not overly concerned. You know, I know he made a bit of a boo-boo in a previous game as well. But for me, I don't know. I'm still happy with him. He had a very good game after that. You know, he pulled off some good saves. He's a good shot stopper. We seem to be definitely more fluid coming from the back with him in the team, you know. But I think it's all about just learning. The defenders having to learn about, and you know, obviously when we move on to Paul, I'd like to ask him that, you know, as a defender, how would you feel about having him in the back? But I do think it's just a matter of the team learning, you know, about his weakness and his strengths, and he's just got to learn that now that's a global thing, that teams are going to try and do that. You know, they're trying to close them down early, see if they can catch him off his line. But I just believe it'll do us more good than harm because it's out of the way early. I thought that game, we were absolutely fantastic after the break. We really were. I think Garnaccio is starting to really come into himself now. He was absolutely phenomenal in preseason for me. And if he stays injury free, I think this could be the season. I think this could be the one where he takes it up a couple of levels. I also felt that Anthony seems to be more comfortable on the ball. His decision making has seemed to have improved. I mean, he's I love the guy, you know, and I won't have bad things said about him. I think he's the next big thing.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
At United. And I think in pre-season, he's shown that, you know, that his decision-making has definitely 100% improved. A little bit disappointed, but not surprised that we bought a striker and he's instantly injured. I'm looking forward to seeing him play. But I think all in all, you know, the games that we played are the majority of our first team in preseason. I think we did. I think we played some nice football. And like I said, I think, you know, Garnaccio, if he stays fit, this could be the season for him. And I think this is Anthony's time to shine. But I'm a little bit biased towards him. So
yeah, good problems to have for United, really, considering, you know, we were last season. It's like Sancho's not really playing well, but you've got to give him a run of games. Martial, not really sure what he's adding, but we've got to play him because we don't have Ronaldo. And, you know, Weghorst, long live Weghorst, wherever he's gone to, bless him. But it was not the greatest experience. And now it looks like United have got good options across that front line. And, yeah, you're talking about who's going to be left out when Højlund is fit. And that's not a bad thing at this moment, especially even despite Varane's protestations, considering how many games we've got, we're going to need to utilise that front line and different options as well, because they're all different kinds of players. Paul, so I think the obvious thing to do would be to start really talking about Onana and the mistake. I don't, like Dave said, it's out of the way in a way. And I don't want to, you know what I'm like, I'll go straight for the historical comparison. And you know, people will talk about Barthez and that sort of stuff. And I know Dave said two or three times, probably more in hope that that's the one mistake out of the way, because that doesn't mean that there's not going to be another one next week. But the comparison I'm going to make is with Harry Gregg. And obviously not many people listening or watching this are going to remember this, but I certainly don't, only through analysis. But Gregg was signed to move United's play 20 yards up the pitch. And a few weeks into his United career, we were playing Red Star at home, obviously the first leg of the famous two legs, which ended with the crash. But the first leg, he was lobbed from 30 yards because he was standing on the edge of his penalty area and everyone was sort of like having a go at him. And he held his hands up and admitted that it was his fault. But the point was, the prevailing point was that what United had gained in the play, they were unbeaten from when Gregg had arrived, and they'd start scoring a lot more goals because they were able to condense the play further up the pitch. Theoretically, all these years on, albeit different style of football and everything like that, but theoretically, that is what Onana is going to do. So I don't really want to talk to you too much about the mistake, because mistakes happen, and if they happen four or five times, then we'll call an emergency podcast to dissect it. But in terms of, I want to talk to you, because we got a question from Dan, one of our podcast website admin guys, and he asked, he was talking about an honest first friendly where there was an infamous clip now where he was he had a go at Maguire, and it seemed to like be really stark contrast to the way that De Gea would play. You know, De Gea and Van der Sar. Van der Sar was a little bit more vocal than De Gea, but Onana seems a lot more vibrant and active in that regard. And the question really is about playing in front of strong goalkeepers, because you played in front of Shilton, Seaman, Schmeichel, three very vocal goalkeepers. As a defender, does it help you as an individual? Does it help the defence focus more with a more vocal goalkeeper, or does that not really make much difference?
I think it makes. I wouldn't really know, because I played with vocal. Where I'm trying to think, wherever I was, I played with majority of the time with vocal goalkeepers. Big Pete was the one. Big Pete would have done exactly the same as what Onana done. Exactly the same. And he was doing it every week. Everyone talks about his big bust-ups always with Brucey. Yeah. Always with Brucey. But maybe that got a little bit that way because they were neighbours anyway. They were like lived on each other's doorstep and they travelled in together quite a lot of the time. So that was that bit maybe he felt because he could do, because they knew each other inside out, really. But Big Pete was like that. Even the teams would have a shot from 30 yards. Big Pete was always going to moan at somebody. It was his nature. Schultz would always moan. That's his nature, and he's still miserable now, Schultz. But when everyone looks at De Gea, but I think that because we goalkeepers are different mentality to what they were years back, goalkeepers are different body shape. I mean, when someone like Big Pete or a Dave Seaman shouted keepers, generally most people would run out the way. You see most keepers now, and we'd all fancy ourselves against them because they're built like greyhounds. They're about height and they're rangy. They're not big, strong men, and they're not going to come out with their knees up or anything like that. So it's a different mentality now, how that has changed. But I look at the goal, Nana's one. I look at it, I think to myself, can we blame him? No, not really, because everyone's been asking for the last few seasons for a goalkeeper to be good with his feet. There's no point of him being good on his feet if he stood where that ball, where United had the ball, and he was stood on his goal line watching. Yeah. It would have been no good. Because I'll tell you what, if he was on his line and they'd lost the ball there, then straight away they would have broken in behind. Everyone would have been asking questions of him. He was too far back. Six, one half dozen the other. It's all about individuals, their opinion of it. But you watch Ederson, even a City goalkeeper yesterday, and you watch every time City had the ball at the back, he wasn't on his goal line. He was kind of looking and he was gauging himself and how they stepped forward. The difference was, though, is that Lons went and had a go at Manchester United, because at the moment in time, until United get that right with the goalkeeper and the back four and they breed confidence, then people then would look at them with the ball at their feet and they won't gamble as much. It's like what people don't gamble against City too much. Because if everyone gambled and believed they could get it, then you look up and people were taking pot shots at their goalkeeper. People would take pot shots at Brighton because the way Brighton play as well. So what it was just one of those moments. Dallow just had, again, he does that, Dallow. He does just most simple things. He's the one who kind of makes them more difficult. That's the way he is sometimes. And he was having a good time prior to that. So, that was just a moment. Was it a goalkeeper mistake? Not really, because it stemmed from a right back who got it wrong. And the margins are much smaller now in football than what they were many years ago. So any mistakes now are being jumped on very, very quickly because of the more technical ability of the players. You don't have to generally always be a great player to have this greater technical ability. They generally all got it now anyway, in that sense of with a ball at their feet and the way they strike balls. So I wouldn't blame him for that one. But when I look at the way United now in their back four, I think it's made a difference. He definitely will make them go forward better. But again, United's strength, even with De Gea, they was going through that spell. And Varane and Martinez playing together made such a difference. The ball went forward a lot more quicker. And it was always, they did it quicker. The ball got into midfield. Even in, like, Martinez is one of those players who misses out the midfield and he goes straight into the furthest player sometimes. That's how he did it. It wasn't happening prior to that. And that was with De Gea in goal. So, but I think now it'll happen. There'll be more consistency in the way they'll go from the back. And Arna's going to make mistakes. David De Gea made mistakes. But we'll wait and see how it works out now on the fact of... Onana will make mistakes. He's going to maybe kick them over, you know, get it wrong. He's going to bobble up onto his ankle. He's going to kick it out of play. Let's see what happens when all of a sudden he's having one of those quiet periods and he pulls off a save from nowhere to keep United in the game or to win United a game, as David De Gea done so many times. And I've said that 1,000 times in here. I'm a bit repetitive, really. But I liked him. I just thought it was wrong the way that he's mostly feeding himself how people talked about him. There's a lot of disrespect towards him. And I'm pulling it more on the newer supporters who've done that, not the ones who had seen when United were going through a bad time and what he'd done. Well, I think the ones there, they didn't see that bit, Wayne, the bits he'd done during that time. They're only just gone on the last few seasons. I think the season under 10 Hag is straight away blowing up a bit more because a different style of play has brought it all out. And everyone, a lot of them have jumped on it, you know, at that kind of, you know, the FIFA age people.
I'm not going to make any apologies. I was a big De Gea fan. I thought he still had something to offer at the top level. Yeah. I still do. I will say, perhaps when I said earlier that he's not as vocal as perhaps other people before him or after, perhaps that's because A, it's still the most high profile position in world football to be the Manchester United goalkeeper, so the daggers are out. He will know what it's like to get consistent abuse. So he's not someone who's going to dish it out and put other players under the spotlight. Actually, if you think about it, it's responsible teamwork. I mean, all right, the United weren't achieving at the real top of the game as they should have done. And maybe De Gea might have been under a different kind of microscope if that, or, you know, maybe he wouldn't. But the point is that it could well be, and I'm just speaking as someone who doesn't know him personally, that might have been part of his personality, that, you know, he's seen what it's like to get criticism, to be the person who gets the consistent abuse on social media. And if you start pointing the finger in a team where, let's be fair, fingers could have been pointed over these last few years and not just at De Gea, that, you know, it's not fair for players to be doing it to each other. Obviously, when you're in a team that's right at the top, like, you know, Schmeichel and United are winning all the time and you know, margins are fine, then you kind of need that kind of aggression because it brings the best out of everyone. We did have a comment just before we move on from T2, that Izzo, he says it wasn't Onana's mistake. Delo played a sloppy pass. Onana was able to cut out a number of attacks by being higher up. And yeah, that's a good point. By the way, Martinez, I spoke to Alan Keegan last week, and obviously he's the man who would know, and he says Martinez. So that's what I'm going with for the season.
I'm sorry, Wayne, before we move on, I do have a question, though, for both of you. If Onana was shouting at Martinez, it's Martinez, yeah? Of Iran, I don't think it makes the news. I really don't. I think it makes the news in a positive way that this goalkeeper is not taking any messing about. You know, you would see video clips of Schmeichel, you would see video clips of Barthez screaming at players. I'm 100% convinced the media turned this into a negative because it was Harry Maguire.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
100%. If it was any other player, they would be praising Onana for what he did. I just think that they latched onto the Maguire thing, which, you know, the complete disrespect he's received from a section of fans is nothing but, you know, it's a low life way to behave, going to a game and boom, one of your own players. And I know we weren't probably going to touch on that today, but I certainly want to bring it up. I think, listen, we all know that Maguire is probably not, you know, his time at United is up. But he's not a bad centre-back. He really isn't. We've had this discussion in the past. I just think his time at United is up. There's teams out there that he could go to, and, you know, they play a different style that would suit him. But to be booing one of our own players is absolutely it's disgusting. But anyway, I honestly believe that whole thing with, because when I seen it in the media blown up that Onana was shouting at Maguire, I mean, I'm thinking, well, isn't that what the goalkeeper's supposed to do? I mean, yeah. I grew up in you know, watching United in the 80s and into the 90s, and Schmeichel, I mean, I'm sure Paul can confirm this. I don't think there was ever a game where Schmeichel wasn't complaining, wasn't screaming at someone, wasn't shouting. Like you said, someone takes his stupid pot shot from 40 yards and it goes up into row Z, he would come storming out of his box, screaming at everybody, of why did you let him even take a shot? And it's like, well, it injured someone like 42 rows up. Don't worry about it. No, that's the way he was. I don't get it. I don't get the negativity around it. I think it's what we should expect from a goalkeeper. And like I said, if it was Martinez, if it was Varane, if it was anyone else, the media would have painted it as a positive of, oh, now United have a goalkeeper that is going to command his box and is going to do X, Y, and Z. But instead, you know, it was turned into a negative. And then we had people having pot shots saying it was unfair to shout at Maguire. That blew my mind. I'm like, what do you mean it was unfair to shout at him? That makes no sense. I'm sorry for cutting across you, but I just wanted to get that point across. I think they, because it was Harry Maguire, they turned it into a negative.
Yeah. No, Paul and I, over the last season, Maguire has probably been the one who got the most criticism because he was out of form last season. But we in the season before that, we were talking about Lindelof and Eric Bailly, me and Paul, on a weekly basis. And it got to the point, not in a bad way, but at the point where it was like, these players have been criticised enough. You know that they're not up to the standard. There's no point criticising it. Everybody knows it now. Do you know? And that's where we are with Maguire. And yeah. I think, like, all right, everybody accepts. Maybe he doesn't accept that it's time to move on. And a player's ego can do that. You know, he might want to stay at Manchester United. It's a place to be. But like a lot, you know, if you're a high-profile England defender and your next move is going to be down, you are going to be very reluctant to leave United because for obvious reasons. I don't agree with the booing. That's absolutely ridiculous. But it is what it is. I wouldn't do it. People are entitled to do what they want to do, aren't they? Hopefully there'll be no booing on Monday. Let's get to the Wolves game on Monday. Premier League football is back. Incredibly. Can't wait. Wolves, traditionally one of the worst games to watch, possibly only surpassed by a game against Newcastle these days. But they have changed the manager and they were slightly easier to play against last season. It made the games not as difficult to watch. And they've had a difficult summer, really, Paul. I mean, they've signed a couple of players. This Cunha from Atletico Madrid is basically their replacement for Neves, but Neves was so fundamental to the way that they played. So was Moutinho, and he's gone. Adama Traore was so fast, terrifying when, all right, he's inconsistent, but he was so fast. And they've lost these players who were so crucial to the way that Wolves have played football for the last 4 or 5 years. And now they've got a new manager, a new direction, a few new players. A lot of people are tipping them as you know, not surprised really, as one of the candidates to be dragged into the relegation zone. And it makes it a good time to play them at Old Trafford when they're trying to reset the midfield. Having said that, you know, they've brought in these two new midfielders who might want to, you know, they might just have the energy from the start and really give it a go with license to be able to do that. It's a free hit for them coming to Old Trafford. Paul, how do you reckon it's going to go? Do you think it's a good game for United to kick off the season with?
I think when you start a season, you're playing your sides, everyone is tipping that's going to go down. It's good that you do get them early and more so at home when you're playing at home. But the one thing about Wolves is they were a pondering team, especially when you mention that midfield. No great pace. Their pace come from the fullbacks. When you look at Jimenez, was generally the one through the middle who weren't the quickest, and obviously his game changed because of what happened to him with that injury he got. When you look at, is it Podence? He was there, maybe their only one, the little lad up front with any great pace. So I believe that he's added, as you just said there when you were leaning into it, they've added more energy to that midfield. Neves, keep forgetting now, Neves, what is he, 26, 27? Yeah. I think it's been like he's been around 30 years already. Yeah, it's just incredible. how long he's been around. And someone like him, I'm just surprised that a big club never took him on. There was always the talk, but it never materialised. But for a lot of those players who are playing, he's going to be a big miss for them because he's been around since their championship day. And he was the main man who got him out of the championship, without a doubt. I saw him play at QPR one time, and I've never seen a player play like that. Him and Jota, I saw play at Loftus Road, and wow. Hadn't seen anything like that at Loftus Road for a long time at that level of football. Those two were the difference. And they proved how good they were in the Premier League, and Jota's moved on to Liverpool and carried on. But given that the best strength of that team really has to be the manager. Just him. He's everything about him suggests that you can't write Wolves off. You know, I mean, I think he's kind of had a, I don't know what it is, but the owner's kind of said a few nice things about him and his coaching staff. There's been issues because he's not, kind of seems like he's had his hands tied with spending a bit of money. So he's come in and said something to the owner regarding it, and not having a go at him, but just going with him and saying all the right things. So easy thing to say, and it's a bit of a cliche. United have to start the game right and not allow Wolves, kind of a different Wolves, to start too well and get too comfortable. Because there's been a few games at Old Trafford where they have caused problems.
Yeah.
To be honest, I think he scored there, didn't he, Moutinho? He actually scored in the Premier League, I think it was a winning goal there. I think he scored
the Rangnick hero, yeah.
Yeah, so he's, you know, so you can't, and I just really can't see Wolves as one of those sides who are going to go down at this moment in time, just going, you know, so people are talking because they haven't, everything's now about spending. If he'd gone out and brought 5-6 players and gone for a big change from what it was before, everyone be questioning, oh, it's going to take a while to knit together, so we'd have to wait and see. Because they haven't really done anything in the marketplace, everyone's tipping them to go down because they've lost two key players. You have to remember, Moutinho didn't play a lot of football, did he? He was always coming on a lot as well. So he wasn't playing them at that point. So the team's going to be very similar to what it was last season. So can we say then there's going to be more continuity in the team? And we know continuity is a great strength to have.
Well, it's been Wolves' strength, but I think that's where they don't have it, where they are changing, Dave. Like Paul says, I mean, it is an obvious statement, I guess, but United really do need to start, well, every game quick, but particularly this one, to capitalise on the fact that Wolves are still sort of getting used to each other in the crucial area of midfield. So if United can stamp home something earlier on, then it just makes that game more difficult for them in the way that, you know what it's like for a team of, without wanting to be disrespectful, they are now an established Premier League side. But when they're refinding their feet, if you get them early on and get a couple of goals in and you can control the game in the 110 minutes that you're going to be playing it now, that you a team are more like, not to give up, but that they'll say like, all right, well, this is the free anyway, so we'll just sort of stroll through this. United really need to get Wolves into that position, don't they?
Yeah, I do feel a little bit for the manager for Wolves. I mean, he kept them up, then he lost his best players in the summer, and then his club wouldn't spend any money. I actually thought at one point over the past couple of weeks he was either going to get sacked or he was going to quit. But Wolves have been a thorn in our side for, you know, the past, whatever, 3, 4, 5 seasons. I don't like playing Wolves at this point because they do cause us problems. I was happy to see that they did lose a couple of players over the summer because my first instinct was, well, at least when we played them, they'd be a little bit weaker. But that said, there's a lot to be said about continuity and the players that you have and the players that you're keeping. As Paul touched on there, because, I mean, Nottingham Forest bought, I don't know, 600 players last season. And, you know, that was an absolute mess for the majority of the season, you know, where they were going to put them in, who was going to play. And there's a lot to be said about, even though managers probably want to improve their squad, there's a lot to be said about the nucleus of the team, even though they've lost two of their best players. And now there could be a siege mentality now at Wolves in that regard. I mean, when we spoke earlier on about time waste, and I think Wolves and Newcastle are up there as the biggest time wasters in the Premier League. Statistically, I think it is. I know Newcastle are, and Wolves can't be that far off because we've had many games down the years where we've been frustrated by their time wasting. But like most games, we got to start quickly, and we got to get a goal or two, because you know we're at home. That's all we can ask for. A home game, the very first game of the season against, and no disrespect, a lesser team than the top five, top six. Wolves, rightly so, are probably in the mix right now, that conversation about being relegated, but that may create a siege mentality. It may have the opposite effect of what we think will happen. But yeah, there's a couple of teams at Old Trafford that I didn't like down the years. Wolves is one. And there was a time where, you know, Derby County gave us so many headaches, and, you know, that Pella one-chop game and stuff like that just sticks in the head. But yeah, I think it's going to be a tricky tie, but you can't ask for it. I mean, maybe one of the promoted sides, the first game of the season at Old Trafford, this is probably, you know, on a level nearer to that in regard to what you want to have in your first game. So I'm looking forward to it, but we do need to start bright, because if they dig their heels in, well, you know, they could come away with a point.
I was looking forward to it at the start of this podcast, and now you've said that they might have a greater siege mentality, and I'm thinking, oh, good grief, they really could. So thanks for that. Well, we won't be back next week because of the fact that the game's on Monday night, so it'll be the week after for us. If you've enjoyed the podcast, give us a rating or review on the platform you're listening on, and if you're watching the replay, feel free to give us a comment as well, because we still reply to those. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching, guys. And we'll be back when we're talking about, I guess, how United have done against Wolves. And it will be Spurs after that, I think, is the second game. So a lot to get through that second time. So have a great week, guys. And thanks for listening and watching.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.